一度だけの恋なら君の中で遊ぼう、わがままなキスをしよう。
Hey there everyone, it is May 29th. It is 11:30 or so here in Tokyo. The Speaker Podcast crew is back for another episode of The Gir Talk, and we are Gir Talking episode 9 of Macross Delta, otherwise known as Mesa the Episode. This is your usual host, Gwyn Campbell, and to my left I have...
Adrian Lozano.
And to Adrian's left we have...
Egan Liu.
And to Egan's left, through the interwebs, we have...
Renato.
You sound so genki as always, Renato. You're not drinking tonight?
It's 11:46 p.m. on a Sunday.
That hasn't stopped you before.
That's true.
He has a point. In fact, I feel like...
Wow. Touche, my friend.
Renato only drinks and rides.
That's true. That's true. I actually feel like a drink now that I mention it. So
I'm drinking tea. Is that right? It's not Irish, but
well,
it's just tea.
We have witnessed Renato get kind of wacky by drinking too much tea before.
That yeah, this one's called a lemon zinger. It's not caffeinated, so...
I expect plenty of zingers in this podcast then, Renato. But look, enough about us. Let's get into this episode, get those impressions. A lot of information dumping this episode, and I'm not going to run through it in 100% chronological order because I'd rather lump the information together so we know what's going on. So this might be a bit of a different run through than normal. However, we start off with a flashback of Mesa having a nightmare of the incident that happened to him and... unexplained, undefined amount of time ago, where he has blood on his hands and there's been some kind of incident. We also find out that since the last episode, the supply of Windermere apples, well, as we know, they discovered, you know, the Windermere apples and the water they found react to each other to increase Sizenol, which is a receptor for the VAR. So we've found out that there have actually been repercussions. This isn't Scooby-Doo. The heroes haven't kept it to themselves. The supply of apples has been halted and quarantined. Some researchers found some sort of dummy companies involved in the distribution. And they've also done tests and officially confirmed the effects of the apples with the water, otherwise seasonal. And we then get this huge information dump on what this all means. And if I miss anything here, guys, feel free to jump in. There's an explanation of fold receptors, which all members of Wild Courier have, and it is revealed, in air quotations, is part of the reason they hold auditions. It's not just their singing that they are testing, but it's their fold receptor figures and how high those figures are. Interestingly enough, it's revealed that Hayate apparently also has these. Although, I've got to point out, it could be just due to his pendant, because we've never seen him without his pendant.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
It's always glowing when this happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, no one else in Delta has the fold receptors that aren't in Valkyrie. So, I think that's rather odd. So, that with that hint last episode that Arad apparently knew who Hayate's father was, there's some kind of connection there, I'm guessing. But that will hopefully be revealed in the future. Chuck jumps in. He's like, well, what about us poor old normal people without fold receptors? And Mikomor promptly replies, well, the song. You keep listening to Wild Courier, you'll be good. However, for those who do get VAR, there's no real treatment. I mean, the Wild Courier song cures them, brings them out of it, but... it appears, and it's made apparent throughout this episode, that it can recur. It is a recurring thing if the conditions are right to trigger it again. Now, this is probably why, previously, they've called the concerts vaccine concerts. Because the point of it is to really prevent people from getting the VAR. It can be used to cure the VAR as well in the short term, but they are very proactive in using it in a vaccination capacity.
Isn't that a contradiction?
Is it? It's Macross. I don't know.
Well, they're saying that it can't be cured.
Permanently.
So that's why they need to have concerts all the time.
Right.
But then the concerts are vaccinations, so they don't get infected.
Right, but that was also before they found out about the apple and the water, which I'm presuming if you have the apple and the water, then you're more susceptible than normal people.
Yeah.
And Messer was in the military, so he would have had those. It was a huge information dump, and there's still a lot, as you did point out, Renato, that's kind of vague. Now, as we found out in the stinger at the end of the last episode, Hayate and Mirage know about Mrs. Secret, and, you know, they're very worried about him, and they're pushing for him to, you know, talk to the commander about it. It turns out, you know, Arad already knows about this condition, and Messer is in his room. You see, he has this bracelet, and it has one song on it, Axia, which is by Kaname. Now, I'm just going to jump in and throw the meaning of that all together here, rather than drag it out. So it turns out, of course, that the Messer did, in fact, get VAR'd. He had the VAR. There was some kind of outbreak.
He got VAR'd.
He got VAR'd. He either killed a lot of people or shot himself in the foot because there was blood involved. And he was saved by a song by Kaname. That was the song that saved him. So he has that one song. It's the only song on this MP3 bracelet that is kind of his, you know, emergency medication. If he feels it coming on again, he'll listen to the song. And he stays with Delta because, honestly, once you've gotten the VAR, you know, even though he's been cured short-term, you know, who knows, stress, the right conditions, and, you know, the stress of being in a war zone, because they're at war, is definitely likely to trigger it again. That's something he should be avoiding. But he sticks around because Kaname saved him. He sees her as having saved him, so he wants to protect her. So he's still with Delta regardless. Now, as far as Kaname is concerned, as we previously found out from her biography, from her profile on the official website, she did debut as a regular idol before joining Valkyrie. She said she debuted as an idol, but she never made the big leagues. And so she kind of faded into obscurity and just kind of retired. And then she was picked up by Valkyrie because of her fold receptors. However, you know, at first she was the ace of the team. And I think it's cute that Valkyrie uses kind of squadron terms. Like, you know, instead of ace pilot, we've got ace singer. You know, and I'm sure they scramble the girls like they scramble planes when necessary. She was the ace
for... scrambled Valkyrie.
There you go, Renato. I think that's the name of this podcast. And she was ace for a short time, but then Mikomo came on board, and she's like, look, Mikomo is the ace now, and heck, after that we even have Freya. She's like, I'm no longer the ace, I'm the leader, I seem to have some kind of ability for leading people, if I do say so myself, so I'm cool with that. So she seems really all right with it. But it was apparently during this period where she was the ace, this brief period, that she saved Messer.
What's kind of interesting about that is that actually does happen in idol culture.
Yes.
Like, this whole scenario is, you know, it's all based on popularity, but it depends on when a member comes in. So if somebody else comes in later, either they graduate, they leave, or they take secondary positions somewhere else.
Yeah.
And but looking at Messer, he's also the type of fan as well, because we're all familiar with the majority of fans doing otage during a concert where they're doing all the dancing in sync with the music. But Messer's the kind of fan that would sit in the back with his arms crossed doing what is called the tiger.
What is this thing, the tiger?
The tiger is literally the person, a hardcore fan, that doesn't get into all the otage and the chanting. They literally go to every event, they stand in the back with their arms crossed. And that's supposed to represent like a tiger looking at their prey kind of thing.
Looking at their prey or protecting,
you know,
their...
just kind of, yeah, they just stand in the back and they look like they don't want to be there, but that's just how they participate. But they're just as much into the idol groups as the people doing all the otage. And then this past week, there was some fan art that you showed me where it's like Team Messer versus Team Keith, like, you know. And he's got the otaku towel for Kaname, and they've got the glow sticks, and they're, like, battling against each other. Mm-hmm. So, I think to most people, they're not going to notice that, but that is some really, really deep idol culture kind of underlining tones in here.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's, like, when she was talking about the ace and stuff like that, the first thing that came to my mind was just the rotation of AKB48's top idol, like, who's the center. So in AKB48's case, they call it the center girl, but in Valkyria's case, they call it the ace girl, I guess.
Right. Well, you know, they didn't have any big graduation ceremony for her. She just apparently faded out, didn't make the big time, so... But hey, that was to Valkyria's good fortune. So, I've just basically, you know, surmised... the really important parts of the plot. So let's jump back a bit and look at some of the small points that came up. So we also have a bit of an information dump about ruins, protoculture ruins. There is a protoculture ruin on Ragnar, underwater, as everything seems to be in Ragnar. And I didn't quite catch the name. I think it was Agora Patora. I believe that's a Greek reference, but I'd have to look it up, going by the spelling. There are ruins on Ragnar. They send Valkyria down there, and they sing to the ruins, and they get no reaction. Not like the last set of ruins that we saw react. And again, speaking to how fast this series goes, you know, seeing Valkyria underwater in these, you know, diving suits, I kind of flash back to Magma Diver, the episode of Evangelion, where just getting, granted it's a little different, but normally, this would be a whole episode dedicated just to getting them probably underwater, and it'd probably be some fan service with the diving suits, and then, you know, there'd be jokes about running out of air, and then they'd finally sing. This was almost flashback level length. It was like, boom, it's on a monitor, close up, sing, nothing, let's move on. It was really fast, and that kind of surprised me.
Yeah.
But there
was thinking the same thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There are no reactions, and they do mention Kaname and Arad are talking about these ruins. And they mention that there's an energy shaft. Now, correct me if I'm wrong here. It sounds like there's an energy shaft running from the ruins towards the core of the planet. Now, when they say energy shaft, I'm not sure what that's for. I would presume it's to power the ruins, but there seems to be a lot that's not really known about it yet.
Especially the wording. It was like going... towards the planetary core, as opposed to the planetary core powering, emanating towards the ruin.
Right.
So it's the opposite direction of what we would expect.
Right. So I'm going to go back and rewatch that. As we always say, we don't have time to wait for no subs, but it was a bit of an info dump, definitely. Also, when we saw the singing to the ruins, I've got to point out that the song they were singing was, finally, the full Valkyrie version of Giraffe Blues. This makes the fourth version of Giraffe Blues so far. As I said last week, it is this series' Imo. Although, thankfully, it's a song I like a lot more than Imo. We then move on to a training scene where it's Chuck, Hayate, and Mirage all against Mesa, and Mesa promptly kicks all their butts without even transforming from memory, albeit at the cost of almost going VAR again. Now, I'm sure that, you know, Hayate and Mirage realize this, and there's a lot of them, you know, agonizing over what to do about Mesa in this episode, which equates to a lot of scenes sitting around on Ranka Beach. So, instead of Sunset Beach, we need a song called Ranka Beach for this show. There was a lot of sitting around on the beach. But of course, since they're spending so much time together, the rumor mills are in overtime, and the girls are all talking about them.
The girls being the bridge crew and everyone else outside Valkyrie, who are now getting, actually, some dialogue.
Right.
Taco Head, Cat Girl, and Eyes.
Taco Head's my girl, man.
Best I like girl. Her. But do they actually have any names yet?
Yeah, they all have official names, all in the credits.
Really?
Yeah. There's some interesting, you know, gags from about, I think Reyna says that she thinks Mirage is possibly a, I don't even know how you explain the concept in English. Like a live-away wife. Like someone you're married to but you don't live with. And, you know, Freya's freaking the heck out. And Freya's reaction is something we have to mention here, Adrian. In fact, both girls' reaction.
Yeah.
In regards to, are we seeing an actual triangle start here, or is it still a straight line?
No, definitely the sides. You're starting to see the development of the triangle, and I like it better this way because it's not. It seems like as they're getting to know each other, they're starting to form a connection to Hayate, but he seems oblivious to it, which is usually the girl's role in Macross. About being oblivious to it.
There was a point earlier in the episode where you see a little bit more of Freya's reaction when they were talking about, oh, and Hayate, he also has a photoreceptor, and in fact, he resonates with Freya. And at that point, Hayate is kind of surprised, but Freya turns blushes at that point.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, okay. And then that leads into what was going on later.
Yeah, and just right before that, when they're explaining it, Freya's all basically says, me and Hayate. And then that's when Mirage looks over at both of them and kind of like, you two? So finally, after how many episodes of me saying, no triangle, what's up with this? It's finally forming.
Given how fast the series has been moving, I mean, it's had so much other ground to cover, I'm not surprised it's taken this long. But then again, we are this far in, I'm kind of surprised it's taken this long.
Sounds like it might be a deliberate thing on the creator's part.
Right, possibly. Although, you know, Kawamori has mentioned that there's multiple triangles. It's not just a love triangle when he says multiple triangles. There's triangles of comrades, of enemies, of other relationships. So maybe, you know, we're looking at triangles like, you know, Arad and Kaname looking out for Mesa. Although it seems like Kaname is not really aware until the end of the episode that Mesa was relapsing, because she seems surprised. But we'll get to that. So we jump over to Windermere, and Royd mentions he's got something. Sorry, Royd. Keith mentions he's got something to go do, but that it doesn't require the help from Hines, the singer of the wind. We don't need the song of the wind. So he takes Aerial Knights and goes on a bit of a recon sortie. Roy also mentions, when he's talking with Keith, that, you know, they're aware that the apple exports, imports have been frozen, but he seems to think, you know, things are good as they are. He said they've been spread far enough, they've gotten in deep enough. He's like, it doesn't matter. He said, while Curie's realized, you know, that there's something to do with the ruins, he said, it doesn't matter, it's still fine. And what Keith is doing then, after this conversation with Royd, he goes on a mission with the rest of the Aerial Knights to Ragna, and what they're doing is they're looking for these ruins, on the protoculture ruins on Ragna, because they haven't seen them close up, of course. So they basically fold in, attack, and it's a diversion attack, so that one of the twins, it's probably Zhao, I don't know, one of them, can go in and check out the ruins, the protoculture ruins. Before this happens, there's a conversation between Mesa and Hayate and Mirage, and again, they're trying to convince him to quit or to leave, and you know, Mesa says, look, if I turn in battle, you kill me. If I've got the VAR, I'm the enemy. Yeah, which I thought was very interesting. So during this battle, of course...
But it was... Like, he says it so simply, and we've just come out of this training scene where no one could even reach him, and he killed all five of them, or is it four of them, with his paint gun, right? So he says, like, yeah, if I get the VAR while we're on the battlefield, then I'm one of the enemies, so just kill me. Yeah, we tried. We can't. You're better than all of us put together, so... No, is what Hayate should have said. Odd,
because he wasn't part of that training sequence, was he?
Oh, I guess you're right. Yeah, he was on the bridge.
So that might be the way to do it if something push comes to shove.
Well, while Messer is fighting Keith during this attack, you know, he's completely straining himself, and he goes way overboard in fighting him, and the VAR, you know, he VARs out again.
Vars out.
Now, before he vars out, the while Curie do not are not sorted. They aren't scrambled because there's no need for them. Because with no Song of the Wind, there's no Var outbreak. So it's thought that, you know, they're just on standby.
Or so they thought.
Well, there's the only outbreak is Messer, but yeah, as you said, yeah. Renato, since he's potentially so dangerous, they all, you know, suddenly they're scrambled, they have to sing. And they're singing from memory, it's Our Battlefield, right? Bokura no Senjo.
Yes.
And the interesting thing about that is that song, if you, you know, listen to it, there are lyrics in there, and it's like, you know, being on the battlefield and, you know, lives that burn out, and if I must die, I must. And so that playing to save Messa, who said, look, just kill me, I thought was really interesting. There's a bit of interplay going on.
Well, the yeah. theme of the story in the episode.
Right.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting as well, but, you know, I felt that what they were going to do was they were going to have that song, and then that song wouldn't work on him. And then, what's her name? Kaname. Kaname would take over and sing Axia.
Right.
Live. And then he would snap out of it.
Yeah, I was expecting that as well, honestly, or something similar. As it was, the song reached him but didn't really get through to him. It was Kaname's voice, like, yelling out at him.
Yeah, so it had the same effect. I just thought they were going to switch the song.
Right. That's a good point. Although, again, with Axia, once again, we've gotten a new song, and the first, a full WoW career version of Our Battlefield, because previously it was just Mikumo and Freya, and I must admit, I prefer the just Mikumo and Freya version so far.
Yeah, me too.
Which is good, because it's future-proof.
The Freya version all by herself, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. There you go, which goes together with...
You're thinking of Giraffe Blues. Yeah, right.
Talking about yeah. Giraffe Blues.
Yeah. Sorry, Renato?
It goes with what I was saying the other day. Those two are the only ones that matter.
So, anyways, long and short of it is, during all this, one of the twins finds the ruins, Protoculture ruins. He's scanning. He detects that they're pretty much intact and probably activatable, if that's a word. And so the Aerial Knights all bug out. They pull out because they've achieved what they've come to do. So in the aftermath of this, as I was saying, it seems like Kaname wasn't really aware of Messer's condition, and she complains to Johnson, Captain Johnson, like, this is too much. It's going too far to have him fighting in this condition. And Johnson agrees. He's like, no, I agree. He's like, but I knew about it because I get regular reports, which we pass on to Lady M. So again, the Lady M name drop. They're just building that up to something they can't possibly deliver on.
I thought they were going to do an in-joke with the captain. Because, you know, he's voiced by Shizuka Unsel, right?
Right.
Who is Gold, Goa Bowman, uh-huh. from Macross Plus. So, like, when Messer was getting all varred up and he was losing control,
uh-huh.
he was, like, looking there from the monitor, and I'm like, yeah, I've been there. He can handle it. I know what that's like.
Well, it's funny. You should.
I thought his eyes were going to explode because, like, all his muscles start bulging up and stuff.
Yeah, it was
pretty close.
Started to remind me of the old Running Man animation short.
Oh wow!
Yeah. He's like, I'm like, yeah, he's about
from the Animatrix. You mean?
Is it Neo Tokyo?
Yeah, Neo Tokyo short skit.
I don't remember that.
Don't remember that.
It was Kawajiri, wasn't it?
It was Kawajiri. It was the only.
Yeah, Kawajiri, that was from Animatrix as well, right?
No,
that is
This is like about 20 years before that.
Yeah, Animatrix had something like that, just like every other segment in Animatrix. It was based off something that came before. But that's what it reminded me of, or it reminds of the any Macross version Plus. Of Macross Plus.
And even during this attack, Bogue does his usual shtick of getting annoyed at Valkyrie. He always goes straight for Valkyrie. From episode 0.89, he's always just made a beeline for Valkyrie.
Yeah, with the same stock footage, by the way. So.
Well, of him leaning forward in the cockpit, right?
Yeah.
I've been catching a lot of stock footage in the last three episodes. Like, it's really short. I mean, they changed the background a little bit, but yeah, it's the same shot.
Yeah.
And he goes in to attack them, of course, and he fires his Lil Drakens, which then fire missiles, which makes it a little bit redundant, I guess, because they're all just flying straight. There's no real benefit to launching them than launching the missiles. But you get this close-up of the missiles firing at the Elysium, and the Elysium's got all this AA fire coming out. And it looks a little... It looks a bit like Macross Plus. You know, where you've got Sharon Apple raising up with the SDF-1 and all the gunfire. A lot less gunfire, though, but the angle certainly invoked that image to me.
Yeah, and then the captain said, I remember this too.
Plus some of the gunfight earlier, like what we saw, you know, with Messer going at it with the it looked all like the dogfighting in Macross Plus as well.
I actually thought that in the early battles, mm-hmm. before the sun goes down and they're battling inside the clouds, that reminded me of Macross Zero.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So you have it here. Please just watch your old Macross Zero and Macross Plus Blu-rays because there's nothing new for you in Delta. Well, see you there.
During that dogfight, though, it did seem that finally, maybe due to the shared concern over Messer, that Hayate and Mirage were coming together better as a team, fighting. Like, they were blocking Berg's attacks, shooting down missiles together, etc. So it did seem to be the beginning of them working better as a team, like you see in the opening of the show. But yeah, that was kind of cool. And of course, I've got to mention that as the Aerial Knights are pulling out, just as they're about to pull out, we get some reinforcements for our heroes, and that is not one, not two, not three, but four VF-31As. And oh, they are pretty.
And, oh, they are just cannon fodder.
Like, well, no, because they didn't get blown up.
They didn't, but it's just sad that you know they're just cannon fodder, unless sometime down the road they turned out to be, like, a Macross 7 team that actually has pilots and...
Yeah.
Yeah, which that would be cool if they incorporate them actually later with actual characters.
But I actually don't mind them being cannon fodder, but I do... feel bad for the lack of screen time. It's okay to just be in a scene and then get blown up, but these guys didn't do anything. They showed up, and then the Aerial Knight said, well, time to go.
I think it was actually their plot point. You know, they just made them into a plot point, because didn't they say earlier in the episode that, we have to scramble the Delta team because the other teams, Alpha and so on, are away, and then you saw the missing arm on the other side of the Macross Elysium.
Mm.
So, and now they're back, coming back, and okay, good time to, you know.
What were they doing?
I wonder what they were up to.
Yeah.
I'd like to see them in a regular battle. For example, you know, with Aerial Knights being engaged by Delta, if the VARD out 171s could be taken on by the VF-31As, they are far superior technically on a technology level, I should say.
Yeah, so I imagine that's what's going to happen in later episodes as the battles become fiercer and get more built up.
And because if they're housed on the right arm of the Elysium, they can't just be cannon fodder, you know, because they're not just part of the team from the same ship.
Hmm. Yeah, and we did hear about them in a previous battle, the one in the asteroid. They're mm-hmm. talking about the Alpha and Beta being also out there, covering the parts of the battlefield that Delta weren't at. So they're about and around,
right?
Except when the plot requires them not to be there.
Now, Egan, you also made an interesting comment during the episode regarding poor Hines. It seems that his song, as previously mentioned, is needed to at least activate these ruins. Valkyrie has something to do with it, to getting them to work or charge, I guess, but it seems that Hines' song is necessary to activate any ruins.
For now, at least.
Right, so hint given that his health, mm-hmm. that might be taxing. But we're throwing around the idea, Renato, of, well, what if Freya can do it as well? That could be.
Yeah, because she's Windymerian, right?
Exactly.
Yep.
So with him dying, what if they're trying to get their hands on Freya once they find out she can activate them? Of course, you get... Oh, sorry.
That's right. Roy was saying, don't take out the Valkyrie. Their reaction to the ruins are fascinating, are interesting. He has a couple of cards still left in his sleeve, ready to deal out if need be.
Yeah. Spiritual Farm. Seven did it.
Well, if you think about it, of course, the issue is, well, then why weren't the Ragnar Ruins activating when Freya and the rest of Valkyrie were singing to them? And if you go back to, like, episode 3, 4, where, or 3, where there's the first training of Freya with Valkyrie, and it's mentioned, I think it's Machina that mentions it, that she's the kind of type that doesn't fully activate unless she's fired up, she's got something at risk. So not having that when she was singing with the team, the ruins didn't activate.
Because she doesn't care about Messer.
Yeah, no, she's like, well, I'm talking about when they were singing to the ruins, not singing for Messer.
Oh, you mean underwater?
Yeah, like if Freya has the same power of Hinds, if she did, then why weren't those ruins activating? Well, there's some kind of mental switch, I think, that's not turning her on. But okay, so any thoughts? I think this was a fairly information-heavy episode. There was, you know, some decent action sprinkled in two spots. I wouldn't have minded if it had less or more action, to be honest, because it almost feels like they're trying to... At some points, they're like, oh, we've put too much talking in here. We better throw in an excuse for a Valkyrie battle. Because, yeah, I get, as you mentioned, Renato, that the reason for that training montage... Because it seemed rather sudden. There was really no mention of, well, we're going to be doing training maneuvers or anything like that. It was just thrown in there. And I get that, you know, the point of it was to show really how good Messer is and how even if he says to kill him, they might not be able to take him down. But it did kind of seem like...
Yeah, it's like Hayate would be going, no, don't get me wrong. We don't have any moral objection to killing you. We just physically can't, okay?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
It felt a little bit like, you know, like when they were filming Pink Eiga back in the 70s for Japan, a lot of directors got their directing starts by doing what was, you know, softcore porn, basically. And they wrote stories as they want to write them, but they just had the rule that you can do anything you want, but you have to throw, like, a sex scene in every 7 to 10 minutes. So often those seemed really, really strange and really out of sync with the rest of the movie, which had a really good plot, and then suddenly there was a softcore sex scene.
Yeah.
With Mecha Action being sex for the eyes, it just seemed like... Oh, they hit that 7-minute mark. They had to throw some mecha action in there.
I was going to throw in the Airwolf syndrome. You guys remember Airwolf from the 80s?
Uh-huh.
And they only had so much stock footage of the helicopter doing battles and going through training. So they always had to, at the last 5 minutes after all the plot, okay, now we throw in the helicopter battle sequence at the very end. Just to it is called Airwolf, isn't it? That kind of thing.
Yeah, and I remember... I think the original Macross was one of the first shows not to do that because episode 4, if you remember, there were no Valkyries in it whatsoever.
Hmm.
And remember, there was a disagreement among the staff, specifically the older director, Ishiguro, and the younger people saying, we need mecha battles. We know this is a mecha animation series. And then one side would say, no, we don't necessarily have to have a mecha scene in every episode.
Whose side was Ishiguro on?
I'm trying to remember now. You remember that, Ronaldo?
I actually don't remember that specifically about the mecha battles, but I do remember there being a disagreement about episode 4 with regards to how they would get out. Their characterization of Minmei and Hikaru when they were trapped in there. Ishiguro wanted them to gradually fall into despair. Which is what happened in the episode, but Kyle Murray said, no, it should be fun. It's just like kids hanging out. And it's from what we see in the episode, it looks like Ishiguro got his way because Minmei basically goes crazy and says, let's just jump out the airlock together and die together, and that would be it. If you watch the movie where they replay that scene where Ishiguro isn't actually as involved with the creative direction. He's more involved with just running the production. And Kawamori is the one in creative control. It is basically just they're having fun. And then they're just kissing. And then scoopuda. And that's it. There's no despair there whatsoever, right? We don't even know how long they were in there, but we know they took several showers.
Yeah, but so, it's missing the scene where Minmei shaves her head.
Well, there's a reference. Nobody knows what we're talking about again.
It's another idol.
AKB48. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Exactly.
Her mid kissing a guy,
she's
behind her closed doors, and the management should have forced Minmay to shave her head.
Yeah, so in that Sunset Beach scene where Hikaru's taking her out on a joyride, and Kaifun is totally pissed and says, "What if the mass media gets a hold of this? Her career will be in shambles because of you." It's like, what worse could it be? Like, we've already been caught like a flagrante by the whole of Macro City. Oh my god. Anyway, so take out your Do You Remember Love Blu-rays, because that's a better show than this one. Everything's been done.
So,
for the record, I love Delta. It's great. Okay.
So, any thoughts or impressions anyone would like to bring up?
let's see.
Exposition.
Yeah, it was exposition heavy.
One thing that was worth pointing out is that finally we've heard all the songs that are going to be on the upcoming original soundtrack.
But what do you have to announce, Egan? What was announced during this episode?
We now have a second single coming out from Valkyrie that's going to come out August 10th, a good 3 months from now.
Right, and the title is something that is no song that we have heard of on any soundtrack list.
Just when we thought we've heard all the songs, there's still another one that we have.
So it's what? Absolute 0 degrees Novatic.
Yes.
Novatic.
Absolute zero as in, you know, the lowest possible temperature anything can have in this universe.
Kelvin. And
Novatic. What the heck is
It's not Novatic, it's Novatic.
Novatic, yes.
So, Nova, I'm presuming, is like Space Nova. Tick is like antibiotic. Tab, tick. Novatic.
We're reaching, aren't we?
I don't know. It seems to be a made-up word.
Novatic beginner.
I know, right? It's yet another
Novatic beginner and Novatic ender.
Yet another made-up word, guys. So this will be interesting. So, Adrian, were you saying...
I thought it was a good episode. I, you know, like you're saying, it kind of just jumps around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think because they had to get everything about Messer all in one episode, because it was the Messer episode that had to jump around.
Mm-hmm.
Because it starts off with this flashback, him waking up in the middle of the night multiple times. Mm-hmm. And then you got to see, like, they got to prove that he is the badass pilot. And then the end of the episode, he's like calmed down. He's there when Freya goes out and releases her frustration over the tensions between between Hayate and Mirage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think with the amount of time, the amount of time the production had, it was fine. But yeah, it was a little choppy. And the thing about Messer's flashback, it looks like because he had the bar. That whole flashback scene is when he's screaming is because he realized when he snapped out of it, he basically massacred people.
Right. Right.
So.
Yeah. And that previous episode was a bit misleading because it showed the flashback of him shooting without the VAR going on his face. His face wasn't all VAR'd up. And that could just be because it was less of a flashback and maybe more flashing back to the dreams he has of it, because he shouldn't really have a memory of what he was doing just after he woke up.
Which is kind of like Macross Plus when we saw the flashbacks of Gold, which were all misleading, like, what's going on in that sequence, and we don't find out till later on what actually happened back then.
Wow, there's a lot of Macross Plus in this episode when you think about it. Wow. Renato, did you have anything to add?
No, I liked the episode. I thought it was good overall. I was just a little bit disappointed by that thing that I said earlier. Because every episode so far, especially when they have the flying and concert scenes melded into one, they have some build-up and then they have some cathartic release. Mm. But in this one, I figured that the cathartic release would have been just to switch to Axia. Mm. And then have Kaname do her solo, and then he would gradually start to remember and then snap out of it.
Right.
And to somehow involve the VF-31 cannon fodder ones as well a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Just so we see them engage, try to engage about the what they call the aerial knights.
Hmm. Well, hopefully in the future we'll get more of them.
I know, but I just mean in terms of the structure for this episode. Right. Like, it wasn't a climactic thing at the end like it usually is.
Well,
one thing I liked is that we finally got a little bit more of Kaname, because of all the Valkyries, we've had like basically a centric episode for each one of them, except for Kaname, and she was up until this point, for lack of a better word, kind of lacking and a little bit bland in terms of background, exploring her character. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just Messer who got some bit more character depth in this episode.
Yeah.
Kaname,
we find out. She had been the Cyclops of the team, the staunch leader who was rather uninteresting. But now she's a bit more interesting.
So that's good too.
I like the end as well, where, as you say, Freya went outside to just scream "Goody Goody!" to release her tension. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that Messer is hiding behind a rock right underneath her, and he turns around and says, "So you're only going to live till 30, right?" Which is great, of course.
I like and, that he gave her, she gave him advice. Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he asks her, doesn't that worry you at all? Don't you worry about the future and stuff? And she's like, no, I never thought about it. I just live for the moment. And he's like, oh, huh. And the episode ends right there. It's like,
I like how the way she said it. It's a very, you know, Freya kind of way of saying it.
Matter of fact.
Yeah, it's kind of like, and it's also kind of a peppy way. It's like, now, there's so much to now, live for now.
Which is all, again, like the ending of the show, yeah. Which is very much a Freya song that mentions stuff like that. So, I think with this CD single, second CD single being officially announced on the website during the episode, although not on TV, we'd be amiss if we didn't mention the commercial for the OST. This isn't for the Valkyrie album. This is for the regular soundtrack. Now, Adrian, you said something about this commercial being from the 90s?
It just felt like a very 90s-ish commercial that you would see. Well, how we would have seen it on those 8th generation like recorded VHS tapes of TV broadcast, but there was always those kind of strange commercials.
Right. And you get those mixtapes.
Yeah,
right.
Because they're kind of more like in-joke. The voice actor is being the character, and there's an in-joke about that character.
Right, right. And what was the joke this time around? So the funny thing about this commercial was it was being spoken or read by the voice actor for Heinz, you know, saying that the soundtrack is coming, it will have his songs on it. But then he starts coughing and sounds like he pretty much collapses by the end of the commercial. So it's kind of morbid because the guy is apparently dying and is like, buy the soundtrack. I was like, oh my God, that's kind of both hilarious and morbid at the same time.
No, but they've been in character when they've announced other stuff as well.
Oh, for sure, but not
like
in character.
Freya, every
dying.
Time she does the Ichijinsha advert, she's gori gori.
The manga commercial, right? Yeah. But she's not dying in that and making a joke out of the fact that she's apparently terminally ill. You know?
Yes.
So that's it was just caught me off guard. It's like, wow, yeah. And Adrian, you're right. Like, I haven't heard that kind of humor, I guess. Not so much the actors being in character, but that sort of kind of dark humor in a commercial for a while.
But I mean, that's like some Segno Senshiro type thing, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, you mean at the end where he dies?
Segata Senshiro.
Yeah, but anyways, alright guys, I think we've pretty much said all there is to say on episode 9 of Macross Delta. So, Renato, can people find you anywhere?
Wait, don't you want to say the next episode?
Yes.
People keep catching me on that. Egan,
you
hit us.
You always do that.
The next episode is called Senko na Axia, which could either be Axia of the Flash or, going by Gundam's way of reversing things, Axia's Flash, Hathaway's Flash kind of translation.
Flash of the Axia.
And might be
Axia of Bold as Love.
Yeah, it might be an explanation of why we didn't hear the full version of Axia in this episode. Hmm. If that's going to be the focal point of the next episode.
And for all this episode being a Messer episode, we didn't actually see the incident.
Huh.
Which, you know, they don't necessarily need to show it because they've shown what they need to show for the purpose of character background and building, but I'd like to have seen what happened.
What was the stinger? The stinger.
Yeah, the stinger at the end was still a Messer. It looked Messer-centric. It was Messer with Arad with one arm on his shoulder, but then it switched briefly to, I think it was Mirage blushing like she's seeing something embarrassing. So maybe she was seeing the boy's love, the real triangle happening here between Messer and Arad, and she's blushing.
Yeah, that's what I saw.
Or we could see finally something on the other side of the triangle besides Freya and Hayate.
Yeah.
About time.
Yeah. This Mirage is still kind of a wet noodle.
A wet noodle.
Yeah. I mean, she's definitely she's not as stiff shirt as Misa, but she's there.
All right. So on that note, of wet noodles
and stiff shirts,
Renato, can people find you anywhere?
No.
Okay. Adrian, can people find you anywhere?
You can find me on Twitter at GiantRobo.
Okay. Egan, you can be found on this podcast
and elsewhere,
and of course I can be found on Twitter at Gwyn Campbell. That's capital G, capital C, all one word. You can email us at speakerpod@gmail.com. And you can also find me on the Repack podcast, Dishing on Delta miniseries, which they've just recently caught up on. And Craig over at the Repack podcast all about plastic and the amount of money those guys spend on it. It's a good cast, so drop by and give them a listen, by all means. So on that note, this is the Ger Talk. We're all Ger Talked out for this week. Episode 9 is over. Time to start looking forward to what episode 10 will bring. On that note, we're folding out. Kitty.